CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 148 with Dr. Bill Bond. Some amazing life lessons that no one else is going to teach you, plus some good old-fashioned laughs. You're going to enjoy this one. Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. And today, we got a very special guest, a very dear friend who has taught me more about life than, dare I say, my own father. And that is my good friend, Dr. Bill Bond, an ophthalmologist in Pekin, Illinois. Welcome, Bill.
Well, thank you very much, Uday. Very flattering. Mm-hmm. Looking good. I don't know. I've learned a great deal from you.
Yeah, we all learn from each other, that's for sure. But Every time we're in a meeting together, I always make it a point, let me schedule a dinner with Bill Bond. Mm-hmm. Because I know for sure we are going to get some serious life lessons.
Well, yeah, that's right. If only not what to do. Huh? Yeah, serve as a bad example.
You know, of course. Listen, I think as we get older, certainly there's a thing called wisdom.
Yeah.
That boy, only in retrospect do we realize when we were young, we were dumber than a bucket of rocks.
Oh, shit. Mostly, as Oscar Wilde said, experience is the name we give to our mistakes, you know? And that's certainly been the case with me. I've been a hammerhead all my life. I've been slow to pick up on a lot of things. And so I get some hard knocks. And even then, doesn't always knock enough sense into me. I have to, you know. Thank you.
Yeah, but I think that's true for all of us. Yeah. And you know, one of the important lessons I learned very early on, I was lamenting to you 20 years ago about some nonsensical, something in my life, just something bad, who knows? And you just said, remember, don't tell anyone because first, no one cares. Mm-hmm. And no one will give you sympathy. And in fact, some people are even happy that you're suffering.
Oh, that's right. That's straight from my father. Yeah, I had a great source of wisdom, my dad. Yeah, he did. I was 8 years old talking to him. He said, well, you know, it's fine for talking to me because I'm your family, but don't ever tell anybody your trouble. Half of them don't give a damn, and the other half are happy you're having trouble. Oh, yeah. That's entirely true. Nobody gives a damn how you feel. Don't tell anybody how you feel unless they ask you. And if they ask you, say, fine.
But you know, there's so much truth. It sounds funny, like a joke, but there's so much truth in that.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much. Some comics, I think, are basically their entire deal is telling the truth. They stand in front of you and they say what everybody's thinking. And all they got to do is just be candid. They're saying, boy, you don't look good at all, or this or that, or they tell me this. And it's funny because it's true, but so much that way. That a lot of people, if something's true, if something's funny, you need to check it for being true. You get a lot of people. Yeah, you know what I mean? When people have got their guard down, they'll tell you real stuff.
Yeah. It was like the late comedian George Carlin, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. His was all basically truths, which was so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Richard Pryor, I'm thinking of, another Peoria, Illinois boy.
Oh.
Yeah. His basic deal was just say what you're thinking, you know? Yeah,
I like George Carlin he says, just think how stupid the average person is. And remember, half are stupider than that.
Half of them are stupider than that. Yeah, that's absolutely right. Oh, yeah. And artificial intelligence is making the slow, scary progress, but it seems like artificial stupidity is more or less perfected. You can go and try to get on a computer. There's nothing dumber than a dumb computer. And in fact, I'm trying to quantify that for a later talk. What would be the amounts? If you have a science, you're going to have numbers. What would be the amount of frustration with a computer you could have? Well, what I would call maybe, pick a name, but a Gates unit, the exact point where if the computer were a person, you'd lean across the table and punch it in the face. That's, say, a 1.0 Gates unit, you know, or 00. People experience multiples. Like you could have 4 to 6 times people who throw them, run over them with their cars, throw them out of a 6th-floor window. But how are you doing? Well, I was feeling about 0.3 of a Gates, you know? Yeah, 1 GU. And I mean, there it is. You could actually discuss that. If Helen of Troy is the face to launch 1,000 ships, the beauty to launch one ship is 1 millihelen. And therefore, you could go from that. And will that go into the red numbers or anything, you know? You never know. Yeah. I've learned very much from my friend, Dr. Dev Gann. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. You're now putting these amazing lessons and discussions into the Dr. Bond podcast, which I love, the Bond Report.
Thank you very much, Uday. I appreciate that. If I can get up on the level of the cataract coach there, I will be very flattered and pleased. I've learned very much from watching yours. It's been super, but it's also a great deal to have people actually telling you the truth. Most guys at a meeting or something will present some case, and then everybody's 20/20 and the sun shines out of their asshole, you know, when they're done. You gotta have the truth in those things, and you've always been good at that and incorporating that and telling the story with some joie de vivre, you know? Yeah, I've learned a lot from you.
Well, thank you, but mine's obviously a very different focus. First saw your podcast, I first saw the Dr. Bond Report a couple months ago when you started. You had a great discussion about what is a provider, because I don't like that term provider.
I don't either. Yeah, breadwinners, providers. As they try to pull the doctors out of the system and say everything's the team, and the last time you hear that is from Lennon and those guys, you know, we're nothing by ourselves. We're getting rid of the great artiste. We don't think people should be entrusted with this. We're all better as a team. Whether or not that's true, they're certainly taking away the people's idea of what a doctor is and everything. Well, the first thing let's do is let's call it something else. You know, let's not call any. Winston Churchill said that, one of my very favorites. All you want to, if you want to make enemies of everyone, see, the very first thing you do is start calling everything by its real name. He said, and in 2 weeks, you won't be able to go out of your house. And very, very true. And a lot of it, your own life has to illustrate that. You know, you go somewhere and they'll say, well, this, or you're in the middle of making your last mistake. And you think, you know, this is what those guys were talking about, isn't it? And I just stepped right in this. And it enables you, sometimes I take two or three times to make the same mistake. You know, experience enables you to make a mistake once you've made it again. No, that was what I did that other time. I guess it took two that time. Well, you know, three is the hat trick. Sometimes you never learn.
But yeah, life basically is just a series of mistakes.
Well, life's a series of lessons with the big one for the last one, I guess, you know, but I mean, what do you need to know? That's a good looking print you got behind you.
Oh, thank you. Now, how did you get started with the idea of making this YouTube channel? And by the way, we're going to link the YouTube channel below. Please check on it. I am a subscriber. I'm a big fan.
Well, thank you very much, Uday. I couldn't be more pleased to hear that. Thank you. It began at meetings. My friend Spencer Thornton started it in Hawaii. Could I fill in some stuff on a meeting he was having? And I've always been extraordinarily vain about this. They're trying to make that sound good. The last minute he tells me, can you double the time? I say, sure. And then it kind of caught on. My friend Guy Kazarian put it on in a big way at the ECOS meetings that we have out in, there used to be the Delaney meeting out in one of the ski things. And it took off from there. And I got asked to do it various times. It's really hard to remember who you're talking for because you don't want to step on toes quite as hard as you can, you know? And so, you know, there's all these landmines. Normally the room is filled with these landmines. And you're trying not to step on them any more than you usually do, you know? But that's how I've got started. And I've been a little self-indulgent about it because I don't have a lot of squeaking guys saying you've only got 5 minutes and 45 seconds because we got to get to our next topic. And so let's squeeze it into that. And by the way, you know, just meeting stuff that happens to everyone. So I'm trying.
But even how the meetings have changed, you've noticed, like even at some of the meetings, they got rid of like the personality section, right? The personal section. And now it's replaced with like fucking plastics or like pediatrics.
Well, this is all this trend of providers and things. You've got to have a lot more. They've got a lot more of a company face. And, you know, you better not talk. And once again, you got to weigh things. You don't have the meetings that the big guys used to give where they go in there and they drop everything and let's tell the truth. Let's put the microphones down and let's do some truth. That used to be a great avenue for growth. You know, say you look like hell, you're putting on some weight and, you know, what the hell's up with the so-and-so? You got an eyelid drooping. You know, where did that shake come from? You know, you've got to have somebody somewhere telling you the truth or you're going to think you're just terrific. We've all seen that as parents. You know, they raise these snowflake children, they loose them upon an unsuspecting public, and there you are, you know, and all of a sudden you're doing the things that the kid's mother and father should have been doing all those years, thinking, you know, gee, maybe I can send somebody a bill for these. lessons for people who can't bring their kids up, you know. It takes a village to raise a child. Well, it shouldn't. It ought to take, yeah, you know, come on. Yeah.
Now that we're all becoming just providers, what's the future in all this? I also saw you had a very humorous song you made called 16 Cases.
I just put this on there. Did you listen to that last night?
I did.
I wrote it. It looked to me like the old timers that wore those lights on their heads, coal miners. When the old time doctors used to have those mirrors on there, I thought, you know, here we are. There's the provider right there. The government makes us all the same. And here we are. We're getting up in the day. We're going down the elevator. We're working in the coal mine. My dad would told me for years, there's two kinds of job. There's the kind of job where you take a shower before you go to work, and there's the kind of job where you take a shower after you come home from work. And that's it. And that's two jobs. And they're taking us from the first job where I take a shower before I went to work, and they're going to make us the guys who take a shower when they come home from work. I don't think that's a good thing. And as I get old enough to be a patient, I'm scared for where the world's going. It doesn't seem to be the great artiste, the Leonardos and the, you know, what they'd call a cult of personality, but there was an artistic temperament there that the world gets progressively less and less ready to tolerate.
Right. Yeah.
I remember the cataract guys, the great artiste, you know? Yeah, not anymore. Yeah. You're a cog in a wheel. You're spare parts. You can be replaced.
That's the truth. That's for sure.
Yeah. There doesn't seem to be the artist. You know, well, we got a random guy coming. Here's your doctor who you've never met. It's surprising, really, because of all the schooling we did the old days. You know, I'm used to this from being an old timer. You walk into a room and you're somebody's 25-year-old kid, and you're in some ER somewhere, and this guy who's never met you said, well, what we're going to do is split you from your guggle to your zots there and look around in there and rummage around, see, and they'll say, okay. I mean, it's a different world. And now you're correctly questioning everything. You don't know who you're talking to. They put this white coat on, go in there, and act like a provider for a while. There's a facade. You put your fist through it, and it's just made paper mache. They're like chocolate Easter bunnies, and they're air on the inside, you know? Sorry.
Yeah. Hmm. Where will ophthalmology end up then? I mean,
well, I'm hoping for a long and prosperous future, like I hope for you, David. You know, I'll tell you, back to your podcast, when I wanted to get specific advice about a specific problem, you've got them so brilliantly organized, cataloged, and the advice is helpful in real world. And I've gotten a lot out of those videos. A lot of the time in the old days, it would be truth. Look what I can do. Look with this. You're able to sublimate your ego in there in a way that I envy a lot. That's very hard for me to get mine under a bushel all the way so it doesn't creep out.
Well, I try my best, but there's certainly been times when my ego gets out of check.
Normally, life will bring that in. There's an Ambroise Paré. He said, if the surgeon does not understand humility, God will teach it to him. And how true that is. Yeah. That's a guy who's, it's like they'll have a story and they'll say it's written by a doctor, and they teach you enough, as you know, if you're part of our tribe, you can tell in the first three sentences whether you're talking to a doctor or not. Providers, not so much, but you can tell the first three sentences of so-and-so. You learn how to talk and walk and be that way. It's a very different thing that they're teaching the kids now. And anybody under 50 is a kid now. So, I mean, I'll allow for that. The perspective on that changes. Right now, I'm 73, so I'm middle-aged as far as I'm concerned. You don't feel like an old guy. You feel like a young guy who's got something the matter with him, you know? You really don't change your mental outlook after about 25, or, you know, but it'll change for you. Yeah. Well, thank you for your time coming.
Yeah, that's for sure. For sure. No one after a certain age, no one feels their age.
No. You, mine, 25 or 30, you stopped, in a way, you kind of stop learning unless, you know, when you're a kid and you're a two-year-old and you're soaking in language like a sponge. And now every time you get an idea, it's like you're dragging a body up a flight of stairs. You know, you got to really do it and remember where you put it and do all this other stuff. There's all these separate machine parts you got to maintain. And Yeah, it's a different thing. And I've enjoyed writing these talks and try to get it out there, you know, all my, yeah, priceless pearls of wisdom there that seem to me to be common sense. And I learn a little more common sense additionally all the time as it gets less common.
Right.
No.
Common sense, yeah. Not that common.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not. And not always on me either. And you go to some, well, there's nothing quite as dumb as a dumb machine, though. You'll go to apply for something on the internet and you get into some badly designed program, and it's worse than talking to the dumbest guy who was ever born. And you really are very early ready to punch it in the face. It was a person, you know, come on, I'm listening to you.
Right. You need people are being replaced left and right with the AI stuff now. Good luck calling anywhere, having a human answer the phone.
There is an Alan Turing story where he was trying to develop that artificial intelligence in the Second World War. And he said to one of their administrators, well, you know, I know we can't get, but I'm sure we can duplicate the intelligence of, say, a guy such as yourself who hasn't got very much, and insulted this guy at length and was probably just kind of talking. You know, the intelligence of a guy like me, I don't know if we can get right away, but I know someone with your type of intelligence, we could get that very quickly. And there's a certain kind of intelligence that Alan did not have that you can say that story proving there are many kinds of intelligence, and you can tell them by their lack quicker than when people have got them. Yeah.
Right.
You look good. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate whatever plug I can get right now, you know. But you've got
for sure. This podcast goes out to tens of thousands, and the link will be down below.
Yeah.
It's.
Not mine yet. I'm trying to get, this could be my big break. I hope so. I would be honored to be attached to the coattails. So every time I've talked to you, I've benefited.
You're too sweet.
Which isn't the point. But, and every time you get a, you know, they got a word for that, and it's not a nice word, but I mean, I also say I enjoy the interaction very much of your, George Patton saying, well, I'm my own favorite general, like George Patton, but your talks I always look forward to when you were at meetings. You had a guy who was going to tell the truth. You had a guy who was not going to gild a lily. You had a guy who wasn't going to came out and, you know, everybody's 2020 and the sun shines out of their asshole. That wasn't true. And I got a lot out of that.
For sure. I stand on the shoulder of the giants, you know. Certainly one of my mentors for this was Bobby Osher, like the first guy to he's going to show you his complications. So bless him. That's he's like the godfather.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you learn from that. The Godfather also wanted to hear bad news immediately. That was his big thing in the book. He had a lot of wisdom stored up from his life of hard knocks. But yeah, I was thinking something there went right off the rails when I was 30 years ago.
You had a quote in your Bond report, Don Corleone quote. Speaking of the Godfather, Don Corleone quote. Says, be careful what you tolerate, because you're teaching other people how to treat you.
Yeah, you're teaching people how to treat. That's Michael. That's not the old man. But yeah, you are. Yeah, but that's telling the truth. You are teaching people how to treat you. I had a tough time picking the picture for that one because there's so many good Michael things. The ones I like is where he's sitting in the chair looking at you like he's thinking of buying you. And he got his hands over the drapes of that, you know, the arms of that chair looking at you like, tell me something good. I'm thinking of Herb Kaufman, my old chief. And two things I'd use to phrase him is here is a guy who is not fond of listening to nonsense and does not enjoy having his time wasted. I actually said this. I was a resident. I'm walking around. I'm supposed to assist him on a case. I'm like a first-year resident. And he says, you know, you need to quit walking around so much. You're making me nervous. You pace around. And I say, you know, I'm a kid, and I'll say anything to anybody. I'm a stupid kid. And I say, well, Chief, you're not exactly known for your patience. Anyway, he looks right up at me, and he's used to residents and fellows. You could talk back to the guy, and he just said, yeah, well, be that as it may, you're going to find you're not going to get Albert Einstein doing these jobs, getting these towels out, doing these things. And as you get older and you find out the time really is money, you know, there he was. Yeah. How true that is, particularly as they cut back the money. Yeah.
That's a hard life lesson that I don't think hit me until age 50, when I have to look in the mirror and say, you know what, for sure I'm on the second half here.
Oh yeah, over the real. Yeah, welcome, and it's good to have you. And you probably brighten up our side a lot more than it was. Yeah. As we get older and perhaps wiser, you know?
Yeah, there have been some hard lessons, I tell you.
Yeah.
Public ophthalmology, the quote key opinion leader stuff is a tough world. Let me tell you, it's cruel.
Yeah, KOLs. Now, I tried to do a breakdown. I was going to write a slide. K could stand for knucklehead or for know-it-all. You know, mm-hmm. O could stand for obnoxious, obstreperous, a lot of things. Key opinion, KOL, you could be a liar, lame ass, you know, and you could get a lot of things to mean, gee, this was a knucklehead, obstreperous, lame ass that we had at so-and-so, a KOL, you know?
Yeah, that's also changed a lot, I tell you, in the last decade or so. Well, there's a lot more corporate influence there.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a lot more infomercials on the podium.
Oh, yeah, and particularly when they go by the name of science. And I'm actually going to try that in the game of a future talk. Those old things where the doctors endorse brands of cigarettes, smoke Luckies, they're healthier than Chesterfields. I'm not making this up. Or, you know,
I know.
And it goes by the name of science. Another good thing you can say, I've said in one of those, if a thing's got science in the name, it's almost never a science. You can go off of that. Just like if something's got liberation in the title, it never liberated anything or anybody. If something's got science in the title, creation science, solentology, social science, creation science, that ain't science. You can go off of that very early on, you know?
I think you may be right. I'm trying to think of an example of science. It's not fun.
This is what they teach as an old-time doctor. The first thing you're thinking of when a guy's telling you something is you're thinking of counterexamples. Oh, gee, that's not true because of this. And it finds out you have nothing. You know, you're thinking, well, oh, yeah, you're full of crap till proven otherwise. Therefore, I'm going to get a counterexample. And nothing's coming. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You find the truth of that statement by trying to knock holes in it. And, you know, which is the very scientific method, you know. Using science.
It's funny, that's the medical training, right? You had another quote from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, noted author, but also physician.
Noted author, also an oculist, like all the great authors in the outside world, ophthalmologists, Robin Cook, Michael Crichton, trained to be ophthalmologists. We are a proud and at one time a handsomely paid field. Well, you got me there. Conan Doyle, excuse me, sir, I'm not a devil. I'm a fully functioning sociopath. You need to do your research. And I mean, he's oculist. I'll tell you, some of those are my favorites. Oh, yeah. You can quote him at length about almost anything. That thing with about lesson. Well, Watson, life is a series of lessons with the biggest for the last. And that's a Sherlock Holmes from somewhere.
You had another funny quote, which was, I can't remember where you got. Oh, from the Joker. Give a man, buy a man a plane ticket. He flies for a day.
Yeah.
Pick him, throw him off of a plane in the middle of the sky. He flies for the rest of his life.
Push a man out of a plane. He flies for the rest of his life. Life lessons from the Joker. I've been wanting to get more lessons from the Catwoman myself, but I get them from the Joker and the Riddler. And wild people, you know.
There's some brilliance there. Really, there's some. But you know what? Now the crazy part is, online, we've trained obviously AI with all of this humanly created content.
Yes.
But now people are saying that like half the new content being created or more is not just machines creating it based on the other. You're losing original content now.
Well, you're losing the original stuff. You don't know what you're hearing. You know what you're seeing. Everybody who's doing this is selling you something. You get a guy who smiles all the time, he's selling something that doesn't work. I'm thinking there's a John Barrymore quote where he said, "You never how short a month is until you never know how short a month is until you pay alimony." I'm a guy who made payments on a sunrise. We were going to do the cautery things on the cornea. I bought a sunrise for $160,000 and did two cases, and the second case would have killed me and cut me into little pieces. And, you know, I got a recovery from that. I wasn't able to use that. That's $160,000 right in the crapper. And John Barrymore is telling me somewhere, you never know how short a month is. I remember making them payments for this, you know, boat anchor that I'll sell sometime. I kept it in the room with me for a long time just to kind of, lest we forget, you know, keep your powder dry, look over there. And I kept that.
For a young ophthalmologist, yeah. A young ophthalmologist who doesn't know what this is, there's a thing called Sunrise LTK, laser thermal keratoplasty. Yeah. Idea is you'd make basically burns in the peripheral cornea to steepen the central cornea, quote, treat presbyopia.
Oh, yeah. The easiest thing to fool people on is when they really, really want something to be true. And we've tried to say this is the thing that will get you that accommodation. And since we really, really want it to be true, you know, Feynman and those guys talking about in science, you got to get where you don't fool anybody, but the easiest guy to fool is yourself. And you really want to, because you want this to be true. And that is the God's truth. And you tell somebody something they want to hear, or something that agrees with what they want, you can't have an easier guy to fool than me. I'm going to buy this another $50,000 piece of equipment, and it's going to make everything perfect. It's going to make the patient smart. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And somewhere you got the other thing on your shoulder telling you, oh, this isn't going to work. But you think, nah, this will be fine. Just another 50 and we're home, you know. But we used to call the refractive surgery nickel, you know, which is now probably 100. We're going to take this entirely on faith, you know.
Well, you knew they were in trouble with the Sunrise LTK because they have the best parties at the Academy of the ASCRS. Like, they spent money like it was water.
It's got, everything's got to be good, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely right. Yeah, I'd get invited to speak at some of those, and I always enjoyed it because you have a whole subset of people that know what you're talking about. For instance, if I pull my reading glasses out, the general public won't know anything, but pull your readers out at the podium when you can't read your notes and say, you know, it sucks to be a Presbyterian or something, and put your readers on. Ophthalmologic audience will go wild. The general public will wait for something to happen, thinking, oh, maybe you're going to die or something. You know, when does the show start? You know, come on, you know your audience. And we've got our own little, we really want this to be true. We've got these examples abound, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure. I also remember being at, there was a big party at one of the Academy ACRS of a venture fund trying to raise money. And they had such a lavish party. I thought,
Where
this
is
must
the money
be
going?
Your investors' money being spent.
Yes, exactly right. And see, what they'll do is they've got a ready excuse. They've got a sentence or something, like a guy memorizing a slogan. And they'll say, well, this is how we get our name on the map. And I'm thinking, this is J.P. Morgan, man. And J.P. Morgan would tell you there's at least two reasons why people do things. There's the one they give you, and there's the real one. And there's at least two. Mm-hmm. And that's a reason, but that's not the reason. And, you know, that agenda is always going on, you know. And all you got to do is tell the truth on these things, because people so seldom do. Because you get, I was thinking, I remember we had a speaker one time. I hope you get to edit this, Uday, because I just about used names and
we're
things.
We're having a good time. Keep going. Okay. We're natural here.
Okay. A speaker we had for either Summit or somewhere. And I remember thinking to the guy, you're very obviously seeing your slides from corporate and you haven't even read them. So therefore, I'm seeing your slides before you read them, because I'm pretty sure I can read a little faster than you. And so therefore, I see these slides before you. And yet it's me who's sitting there, sitting down, whereas you can't sit down anywhere because you might fall off your wallet, you know? What's wrong with this picture?
Yeah. I think we're done with those chicken dinners, the corporate chicken dinners, where they literally they get some other doctor to read you slides as if I can't read them myself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I learned how to read years ago. I tried to tell my wife this once. You know, I learned how to read many years ago. And I'll tell you, when you go to speak for a corporation, which I've been available for years, but they don't trust me, you know, with reason, I might add, I go off topic all the time, because that's what I do with myself. And boy, they want you to read what the party line is. This is not, this wasn't what you You know, that's not part of what we agreed on down there at the last meeting of the party. And furthermore, you've been getting way too uppity. Furthermore, you're getting off topic. We don't think you can be trusted, and it may be time for you to be re-educated a little bit. I'm getting some doubts about the comrade, and he may not understand the collective nature of the party. We got to make him more of a provider. He can provide for us. He can provide for himself. But first right. off, let's provide for us. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
How did we physicians, how did we doctors lose control of the whole thing? None of the medical system now is run by physicians, whereas decades ago, it definitely was.
Well, the patients quit perceiving. Now you go to a system. You don't go to your own doctor. You go to, I think it had to do with us becoming away from a cottage industry. There was a time, you and I are joking about this, but there was a time when there was a guy with a local gas station. And the most time out of joint, what's the word? I never used to grope for words like this. The time is different. Well, it's Doc Brown and Michael J. Fox pull up to some service station in one of the Back to the Future movies. And the first thing you see is four guys running in lockstep, wearing bow ties, white spotless overalls like Lodka Gravis, and they're running out to your car to start pumping the oil, change your oil, blow up your windshield, change your gas. And the most anachronistic, which was the word I would reach in for, was those gas station guys. I'm going to give my son everything he'd ever need. I'm going to give him a gas station. He'll have a job all of his life. He'll do things for people. He'll know everybody. That was your doctor. And now you go to a corporate place. Gee, they're convenient. They open all the time. One guy's much the same as another. We're all a bunch of spare parts. It's good to remember that everybody's just the same. But they're not.
Right.
They're going to make you spare parts. That's
the problem now. So it's now, now doctors are a very small cog in the wheel.
Yes.
And now it's you're easily replaced.
Yeah. Easily replaced, interchangeable, all look the same. And since I don't know medical advice from my ass in the ground, when I don't watch car insurance or lawyer commercials, the other one is drugs.
Yeah. Excuse me.
That right now is the holy trinity of car commercials. If there were no car insurance, no lawyers wanting to ambulance chase, and no drugs, there would be no television. There would be no commercials. It would all be just nothing. It'd be the Wright brothers trying to fly another couple of hundred yards, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, I think, but you know what? The world's nicely changing, especially like in the ophthalmology world. You notice that we talked about not going to the chicken dinners anymore. We talked about on the podium, you can tell who's giving an infomercial. But
yeah,
when was the last time we picked up a trade journal to even read them? Or even the peer review? Everything's just completely online now. We no longer buy a book to learn a surgical technique. We watch a video.
No. We want a video which you've done a beautiful job. Surgery does lend itself to that because you can watch a guy. I remember thinking this at the Grand Rounds. I've been in the residency about 3 weeks. And so this is why universities, for instance, are filled with knowledge because, you know, you go in there at 18 and who knows more than an 18-year-old. You go into that university and you go out of there as a senior, as knowing you're kind of a dumbass. Well, where does that knowledge go? Well, the conservation of energy, like knowledge, it stays in the university. So that's a place where knowledge is. So the knowledge just kind of accumulates there. So you go there to kind of be around it, hope it comes in by osmosis. And I forgot our original point there, which I do all the time now and didn't used to. So where did the knowledge go? Or remind me, I lost the thread.
Yeah, so that's a whole other catch too with the universities. And so now, even you had a recent post about junior faculty versus the big private practice guy. Universities now, even academic departments of ophthalmology are now just run like a big medical group, and the academic part is less important now than the business part.
Oh, it is. But it's always been. I had our neuro-ophthalmologist, Hank Van Dyke, tell me that one time. When I'm getting to be a good buddy of his when I'm a second-year resident, he'd pull a bottle of whiskey out of his lower right desk drawer, set it there, pour a couple of glasses, and say, I'm a neuro-ophthalmologist. He said, ophthalmology, we don't talk about this, but everything runs by money. So you got to have a subspecialty where you got to have a lot of volume. He said you got to have cornea and retina because those are big cases and they pay well. This is the days where that was true. He said, you get a guy sometimes for, you know, laughs. Well, I was for bismuth guy. Glaucoma is getting more devices, so it don't be okay. But he said, I'm a neuro-ophthalmologist, which means I'm a loser. I went to a lucrative field and I picked the one thing that doesn't pay, you know, who's the asshole? And so that was the Hank Van Dyke life lesson. He says, you look for a guy that goes, gravitates toward what pays the least. He's telling me this, almost 50 years ago.
Your second year resident.
Well, yeah, I'm a second year resident, but they say they're going to teach you something, and they do. They're not lying, you know. Now, when you acquire knowledge, the knowledge you really give up, education's not a pretty thing. Real education, when you think of things you really remember, you pay for that with pieces of your hide, you know? And the lessons you really retain, the really you remember, you might pay it with money, but often you pay for it with some kind of, they call you lefty, or you've got one eye or something. But that's a lesson you can retain, you know? And so that's the tuition that God, if you will, exacts, you know? And now you know something, how do you like it, you know?
That's,
I won't step
that
in that
true.
Again. Yeah, that's the truth, a melancholy truth, as truth so often is. Oh, the one I've liked the most, making up, Uday, is this being a pseudoscientist. Stand up and say, excuse me, young man, I am a pseudoscientist, and I am sure there is a pseudoscientific explanation for what you're saying. That is my own personal favorite.
What advice?
You have pseudoscience, yeah.
You have so much great wisdom to share. What advice would you give to us? So let's say a young ophthalmologist just finishing training, listening to this podcast.
Oh, my.
What advice you got?
Watch Uday. Do what he does. That's where the money is. Uday is normally the first guy to do the right thing. You need to get on. Well, the thing is about Herb Kaufman had that, and you have that. Is you see past the shimmering surface to all the principles operating below, Isaac Newton and those guys. There's a kind of an intelligence that'll memorize a lot of details, but they don't see through into these simple principles that underlie it. And those simple principles inform everything you do. And you can deduce everything from that, like some dinosaur vertebra. You had that early on. And therefore, your talks were extremely worthwhile because you were proceeding from a basis of real knowledge. And you weren't
I'll give you the counter to that. I'm actually not as smart as most ophthalmologists, so I have to work harder. And I always wanted to give a simple talk that I would enjoy. So my criteria for giving a lecture is not to show how good I am, not show how smart I am, because I don't think I'm either. I want to make it as simple as possible and make it a talk that I want to hear. That's it.
Well, I can't think of a single thing I agree with there. Not a sentence, but yeah, you're one of the smartest guys I've ever met.
Oh,
when you reduce things to be simple, I'm telling the truth. And I don't say that to many people. Ask anybody.
Well, my kids tell me all the time I'm not that smart. My kids tell me all the time, Dad, you're not special. You're nothing.
You know, there is a phrase that is missing from child rearing that's a phrase I wish would come back. Because that is my mother talking, and you want to talk about the ultimate phrase now that you never, ever hear with people with childbearing was my mother's go-to. Why? Do you think you're something special? That's my mom talking, and that's everybody's parents talking, and that is sort of the anti-phrase you don't have now. People are snowflakes, they're special, they're this. There's my mother saying, you know, 1956, why, do you think you're something special? That's missing from life, and it needs to come back. Now that I'm safely over the draft age, I think conscription would help people. I think it knocks a lot of crap out of them, you know? This is democracy.
That's true.
I really think so, you know. And now I'm safely, my sons and I are safely past the age, so I'm where I'm sitting on my ass wondering what ought to be good for everybody else, you know? Let us be guided by that. Yeah.
That seems like everything. Our country, our ophthalmology, it's right. People, the tail end telling everyone else what to do.
Well, the one thing you can be sure of when you get a couple of old timers together is they're going to talk about how things are going to hell. And they mean it. Because I remember thinking you'd see a couple of old guys, you know, but these guys had to be like 35, you know, old guys. And they're telling mm-hmm. them that one thing you can guarantee is they're sitting up there talking about how everything's going to hell. You know?
Yeah.
And you'd get the townies, for instance, I'm thinking into Grand Rounds, and they'd be these old guys. That's one guy, he had to be 40, you know? And he's an old bastard like that. They're sitting up there talking about arthritis and funerals, you know? And now, and basically those were the guys. I always thought, what do we have to teach you, old man? You know, you're basically here like a guy who goes to races to see accidents, you know? You're just hoping to see somebody get torn a new asshole. Yeah, and you're up there in the stands going to gladiator games and stuff like that. You're in there for the human interest story. You're not learning much, you know.
That's the old days of Grand Rounds.
Oh yeah,
you're going up there just to get attacked.
Oh yeah, and you're a tethered goat. And the thing is, it's a lot of the lessons are like boxing. You're trying to get a guy off balance. You're trying to get ahead of him. You're trying to scare him with false stuff. But part of my proudest of is lectures, these are from the works of a guy named Stephen Potter, who's an Englishman writing in the early 50s, and he coined the phrases gamesmanship, lifemanship, one-upmanship is what he coined, and these books are just hilarious. For instance, he has a chapter on what he called winemanship that's like 9 pages long, Uday, and you can't ever watch a guy go through some kind of wine ritual and not get this little smile and be able to quote this verbatim, and it's all crapola. You know, and he said, cultivate certain things, read down the wine list menu, pick out the second cheapest because it always tastes the best. And say during the time, say, I don't see anything I like here. When everybody's there, say, let me, I know you got a bottle of Clicquot 73 here. Can I try that? And you know they have it because it's the second cheapest wine on the menu. And you look before to everybody else, but act like they're bringing it out special. Think of some crap that you've done where you drink from the wrong side of the glass and say something. He said, take a taste, try to make it as loud as you can and act like you're chewing it and say something random, chicken piss on rusted railroad tracks. You know, and when you've heard that and now you're out in some restaurant 2 days later and you watch a guy do that and you don't know what the hell you're thinking. You're thinking, I'm in on this joke, or everybody thinks like this, or this guy's serious. I mean, it's a laugh riot. So I was trying to write in that guy's style. But when I need to get back in this kind of arch mood, I'll try to reread a couple of chapters of Stephen Potter, and then I'm right on track again. Oh, yeah, that guy. Oh, yeah, how full of crap people are, you know?
Well, it makes me feel better now because I can never quite get people say, well, swirl the wine. Do you see this? Yeah. Do you smell this? You have hints of barnyard. I'm like, what? I don't get any of this.
Maybe I'm smelling a hit of barnyard on you. You know, yeah, I'm always channeling my inner father thinking of this because my dad was very much old school, but he lived to be 97. And his deal, I don't think he ever enunciated this, but you were full of shit till proven otherwise. And I mean, he was just very skeptical of anything you said or anything you did and wasn't obnoxiously so. He just assumed everybody was like that. And to be able to grow up and have some nice father figures like that, I think a lot of people are missing that. You know, they'll look at something and kind of shake their heads and make little, you know, that helps a lot of people. You get a lot of, wisdom from chiefs and fathers and things like that if you got the right ones, and that's a matter of luck, you know. Try and be lucky if you can't be smart, you know.
Sometimes it's better to be lucky.
Yeah, you're quoting Bonaparte there. You really are. I prefer lucky general to smart one anytime, and you know, yeah, absolutely. Or he said it. A lot of people have thought it before that, but he's the guy who gets credit for saying it. Somebody's writing it down, or you can take it. They had somewhere for applause. I have this slide on there. It's Joseph Stalin, and he's getting a 45-minute ovation. And basically, they're filming it for the first time, and nobody wants to be the first one to stop clapping. Because you can go back and, you know, and that's, think about where ovations and gestures and where things that look like when you start thinking about where does this come from, and then you get to the old man thing where you look at anything and you don't say, what is this? You're thinking, what is behind this?
Mm-hmm.
First thing you think. And that's not a great way to be, but it'll explain a lot of stuff. And then, well, what comes next? What would I do to be convincing? What would this, that? And you see, when you've been on the inside of some of it, a lot more, you've been on a lot more talking and things like than I have. You see what goes to the inside of that and how arguments are made. It's much more like learning to be a lawyer. And what do you say now? And fast on your feet. And how can you make something sound like something else? And that's a very real skill. And that's a very real set of skills. It's not always used for the benefit of mankind, but it's a skill set.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and it's thank you for the many compliments, man. I'm going to look at my watch and I edit that out. I have no sense of time anymore.
No, we've only been talking for 45 minutes. We're good. We got 15 minutes to go. Yeah.
Wow. It feels like
we didn't have fun.
Well, you're kind to say so. I will back that up. I always look forward to U-Day night when I'm going to meetings. We had a little troika or something and totally set that aside and try and learn something or know where the trends are or know what's going to be the next big thing, because that was always Uday. He saw through the bullshit, and he could see where some things were going. Very few people can do that. You'll have a lot of people tell you they're doing it, and you watch them. He came up, Uday'd come up with that more or less every time. These guys are full of shit. Those guys are fine. This is for real. It would be in about, it was mostly, I just watched you. And I tried saved a lot of money.
I wasn't always right, but I was never in doubt.
Oh, that's me too. Oh, yeah. Well, you start doubting yourself. Where are you? That's right. Oh, yeah. And when I have stepped in the most shit has always been when I was the least, I was believing. I was the least doubtful. This is it. I know this is it. That's when I've made my biggest mistakes. Yeah. Get away from being critical. But you always, and you'd get the pretty good inside information. Well, here's where we need to compete with these guys. And then you watch, you never know who to believe. It was.
That's why you just got to be a physician or a scientist.
Yes.
And always just start with doubt.
Doubt with doubt. Doubt will get you where nothing else will get you. And you need to do that. And the more you are sure of it, I don't want to criticize certain industries. It seems to me like they duplicate things. It seems to me like they seize on smaller imaginary things and beat you over the head with that. Well, gee, we're the least likely. Or they'll seize some verbiage in a FDA report and act like that's some big deal when that's actually just kind of nothing, about nothing, for nothing, shall not perish from the earth, you know, by the nothing, for the nothing, shall the nothing, of the nothing, constitutes of nothing. Shall not perish from the earth. It hasn't. The interesting thing.
We got a lot of marketing in ophthalmology, a ton of marketing. And sometimes the marketing drowns out the actual science.
Oh, I would say all the time, almost all the time. It used to be when the guys could get together and do that. And then you got egos and the guys who represent that. You got to allow for that. One thing I'm going to try to do is try to get a thing where people wear numbers at meetings so you know how believable they are. Like in a football program, you can pick this up and you can publish that. How full of bullshit is this particular talk? And a guy could stand up there wearing a number six. It means like you take what this guy says and divide by six. You could do that. Let me see. Take your number of cases, divide by six. Multiply complications by about two or three. There's a number there. And there's always mathematics lurking underneath real science. And you're just wondering, why not eliminate the middleman and have people wear their own numbers? I mean, even have it right there in the program. And you can change it, like golf handicaps change. So-and-so, he's a five. I'm betting he's going to go to a six this time. I bought that machine. It didn't help me. It didn't do any of that. So he's down this handicap. It's a current number. You can play to that. I'm thinking you go in a speaker-ready room, and they got all these jerseys. I would actually pay extra. They could have a spot in there. They want to have money to run meetings to watch guys get assigned their number for that meeting. And they get to haggle about it. And you get to watch. Or even better,
like a race car driver, I want their number on it, but I also want to see all the patches of the sponsoring companies.
Precisely. Yeah. And you can barely get the race cars aren't big enough to get all the endorsements on the race car. Yeah, we need a bigger race car. I can tell you our problem is our race cars are just too damn small, and we just can't get enough things on there. We need some real money. We've got to get like a space shuttle size something and see if we can make that thing go really fast, you know?
So where are we going with ophthalmology? What's the next 10 years?
Boy, I'll tell you, the next 10 years, a bunch of assembly line things, because it looks to me like they've got the cataract value and the surgery value down enough that you can't make any money practicing for the people that really who need it, which I think is a melancholy truth. And you got to process that on more of an industrial model, which means, you know, basically you're standing in line like somebody in the first side. Welcome to heaven. Here's your harp. Welcome to hell. Here's your accordion. Welcome to heaven. Here's your harp. There, it's more of an assembly line thing. We wind up being extremely time conscious, which means you're going to miss a lot of ophthalmic histories and a lot of details. I don't see it. I'm not seeing a happy future as people trying to stay in economic practice are trying to, you've got a story to relate and you want someone to hear it. There's a Lord Chesterfield's letters to his son when he said, don't forget common touch. He said, many people would rather you heard their story than fix their problem. And we're getting on the other side of that. And everything's going to be what it sounds like, and nobody's going to go underneath the surface or what that seems to be. I feel that now when I'm an old timer and I go to the doctor, the guy's filling out a damn computer form rather than talking to me. Gee, how's this? How was that? Well, gee, we need to do this. And it says we need an ophthalmic consult on this. Really? Well, just look back there. No, it says we need to do this. We've all talked to these guys on call. And, you know, you repeat it three times and then you do what they want you to do. I guess I wear down. It's easier to go with this guy once than to listen to him anymore. Yeah. I wish I had something happier, man. I should have given a, we could approve a list of questions like we're having a party meeting, you know? A melancholy truth. As you enter the system more as a patient, you learn some things that you never thought much of about feeling like you heard, they heard your story, the things you want to tell that may or may not be relevant. I think we're going to get where we miss more and more of that. And if you don't do that, you're going to go out of business. You're not going to make any money. You're not going to be able to support a staff properly. If you think you've got any sympathy from the public, you don't. They don't know what it involves. They might if they had an idea what it involves, but they don't. And they're forever going to present you with these providers. We've had mutual friends that I help keep up with their licenses. He'll apply to a license for like 12 states, and you read some of the most crap about how everything's a team now and you got to do this. They want to make sure you watch all the comrades and watch this video. You need to do that. Gee, I can read faster than that. Everyone watches a movie at the same speed, so we want you to watch a movie because we're dumbing everything down. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I thought something else, man. And as I get to be a patient, you feel the lack of that more and more.
For my primary care doctor, I just pay for the concierge service.
Yeah. Well, not everybody can do that. Well, that's, you and I are spoiled because we know what goes into it, but not everyone can pay for it.
Right.
I mean, and that's, I can pay for it too, and that's what I in fact do have. And so I go around what I'm describing to you, and I don't in fact get that. But I sure, and I didn't try and give it when I was in practice. I really tried to.
Right, of course.
And I got out soon enough that it wasn't really taken over as much, but that was certainly the trend. And the next thing you do is, it's Lenin. He said, well, the first thing you do is separate people from their, if you want to control the people, said Lenin, the first thing you do is separate them from their history. So deny everything that they know of that. The second thing is you debase the currency. And now you make everything the same amount. So you can't operate and make some money and have some time to screw around. And gee, here's what your ethics are. I'm thinking, you know, and here's the guy who says, well, gee, wouldn't this be unethical? And you look at this government guy and you think, you know, I got more ethics in my left nut than 10 of you put together if somebody ground you up, which would be a start, but it's not enough of a start, you know. And you're telling me about ethics when, you know, like a Martian talking about, you know, getting a haircut. I mean, come on. Pissed off at your blog because he won't read you the newspaper, you know, stop it. Well, gee, I understand what you're doing here. And you want to say, you know, what does your dog think you're doing when you sit in a rocking chair and read the newspaper? What does your dog think you're doing?
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Well, exactly. You don't. And so this inexplicable behavior, you know, you want to have a history, take a history. Well, what is all this conversation? Why am I paying for that?
Right.
You know, those who don't know teach, those who can't teach others to teach. What? You got the guys who are by this who don't know it themselves and never will because they're going to miss doctors when they don't have them anymore, when it's all providers and it's going that way. And it's going to be the team spirit and we'll have lost something. And then you go a generation, it's gone. What was that?
Well, right.
Yeah. And you'll get the occasional artiste, but, you know.
Even better, now we're developing robots to do the surgery for you.
You know what we need? People that say, let's get a robot for the office. Let's get a robot to do surgery. I always felt alive in surgery, and I felt like I'd use a robot in the office. Well, that looks okay to me. I guess that's nothing much. Pay on the way out, please. A lot of what I did in the office was a hell of a lot more robotic than surgery is. Surgery, you had to be paying attention on the ball. Back at, you know, I'll hear that. Let's have robots do surgery. Why don't we have robots in the office? Well, I guess that'll be okay. That looks okay to me. Here's your form. Don't you know how to read? You better learn.
We can have robots do intravitreal injections because the pharma companies need more revenue. We do more injections that way.
The most obscene fact that I've heard in the last 30 years is the revenue from one vitreous retinal drug surpasses all ophthalmology, surgery, equipment, everything.
Yeah.
The income from one retinal drug surpasses that. And that's some fact like a dinosaur vertebra where you can imply this whole world and have it be true where it's not true. From this one fact, many things spring and many things you can be sure of. And they're all bad, melancholy things about the wrong people are getting rich for the wrong reasons. But, you know, there you go. What is the priority? What do we say it is? What's the reason you give? You always were good at that.
Well, now, just you know what? We're just happy that we can do what we love and help patients. And unfortunately, it's changed a lot.
Yeah.
It'll change again. But we still love what we do.
We still.
I'm so blessed to be in the operating room. I love it.
I am too. And I feel the same. Well, I'm retired. And I don't think anybody, but... when you slant a system economically, it'll give you it'll reward the more intelligent people that can see through that. And now the orthopedics guys are going to get big because they've got devices they can sell to manufacturers who can lobby. And they were always the room temperature IQs were the orthopods. When I was going to school, the orthopods would joke about it. Well, I'm an orthopod, so I'm not too smart. Well, that was the watchword. Hell, they'd joke about it themselves. It's going the other way because they make this big money. Well, since you got a gas there, you got a Boyle's law of orthopods. Now their ego will to fill that container. It's like a gas. And so when you cramp them up, when you push it down, that gets more explosive. When they start bumping into each other, the heat goes up, the pressure goes up, like real life, like doctors. There's a Boyle's law there. When you compress that thing, they're bumping each other more and getting hotter and more disorganized. That's the orthopods now. They've got a thing where they're making money. Well, the first thing you do is figure out how that's entirely justified and has been all along. And they should have been making this kind of case well before this, and now they're finally being recognized. And then one day, that'll change with a stroke of some bureaucrat's pencil one day. But right now, the same as us when it was $2,250 cataract, we were geniuses. Well, hell, just look at this. If I wasn't a genius, would I be making this much money? I remember when they came out with that Sunshine Act and they're going to produce. My only concern with that Medicare thing was, gee, I hope I don't get an embarrassingly small number. So I walk in there with a bunch of guys that are going to be kidding. The general public doesn't know how to read that. They had the retinal guys get full retail value for all the injections they did. So they're in the stratosphere on these millions. Patients didn't read that at all. And I was hoping they would. You go in there and, many, you know, they think I'm worth this. What the hell have you got? Yeah, they're looking. You know, these guys don't have a lot of imagination, and they're going to publish and explain. You know what I'm talking about.
And the Sunshine Act.
The Sunshine Act.
Anything worth more than $10, it has to be reported.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. To guys who mouth breathe and think anyone, there's a George Carlin line, you mentioned him earlier, where, you know, you're driving at the correct speed, you know it is, and everybody, well, I got to get the language out of this, everybody who drives a mile an hour slower and faster than you do is a maniac, and everybody who drives a mile an hour slower than you is an idiot. And actually, he modifies the phrase idiot to the common one. And you're thinking how true that is on some other things. Well, you know, you're doing it correctly and everybody's doing this. And Well, if you're doing that, you must be an asshole. I just don't see how. And so those guys think that everybody who makes a dime more than they do in a year has got to be a gangster. You can't make that money being honest. Look at me. I'm honest. That guy's making more than he does. There's no honest way to do that. Therefore, he's a gangster. We just haven't figured out how to do that yet. It's time to bring him down. I hate guys like him. I hate all guys like him. I hate everybody do it better than me. You know, that's, you're up against that thinking. And that never goes anywhere.
Yeah. Well, this is why you got to realize your most important asset, most valuable asset is time and your happiness. You've got to prioritize those. The other stuff doesn't matter.
Unlike everything else, time's got a limit. And there can be guys who have unlimited money. And it's interesting how people go back to that, what we'd call in chemistry, what a rate limiting step. And you get a guy, I remember a guy in New Orleans, we had a patient, and this guy owned some oil leases, and he made like, you know, it seemed to me like all the money in the world, and $80,000 a day, I'm going to say. Well, this guy starts marshaling his time. He gets very jealous of his time, because you and I and everybody get 24 hours a day and 60 minutes an hour, and that's it. And and you don't know what your end pot is, but you go to the rate limiting step, and that becomes a thing you ration and pay attention to. And this guy, there was nothing he wanted to buy. There was nothing he wanted to do, but he had the same time as you and me. And so, you know, he tried to ration it for himself. That makes a lot of sense. And that's what, in fact, this guy did. But there is a rate limiting step for you and I. Now, I can think of the guy who said this, but the trouble with being poor is just the damned inconvenience. And I'm thinking how true that is. You know, you got to stand in line for this or that, or do, you know, that's the truth. You spend a lot of your time spinning wheels.
Yeah, that's for dang sure.
Yeah.
But better than the alternative.
Oh, yeah. No argument there. Oh, yes. Well, yeah, no argument there. Common sentiment, but I mean, you know, and they don't say much. Who knows if it's not terrific? You go to something better, you know?
You never know, right? As they say, this whole thing, what we call our world, could just be a computer simulation.
Oh, yeah. It would explain a lot. In fact, there was a guy that said, it's hard to believe the universe was created by one God, but it's very easy to imagine it was done by a committee. And the older you get, the more you've been around committees and been on committees and know how clueless they are, that strikes you as a more and more true. You know, this looks like it was done by a committee. And we get, you know, we keep incentivizing the wrong things for the wrong reasons. Yeah. And it has an ending. Yeah.
But it's been a fun adventure so far in life. It's been plenty of ups and downs. It's kind of been a nice zero-sum game. All my pluses have been equally negated by my negatives. I'm basically at zero.
Zero-sum. Well, ophthalmology, we have the whole thing. I'm going to try and work on that. For the next kind of set of concepts for talks, I'm going to try and have, you know, the conservation of energy and the conservation of mass in science. Ophthalmology, particularly grand rounds, we have the conservation of fun. And therefore, it's a zero-sum game. There's only so much fun in the universe. And if you're getting more fun, if, you know, there's the pizza pie, if you get more pizza, somebody else gets something less. So you've got to move in there. Somebody's got to have a lot less fun than you, and you're taking their fun and taking it for you. It's a zero-sum game. Now, you could also argue that, like, anti-mass, anti-energy, and things like this, you know, negative things, anti-matter, can you have such a thing as anti-fun? And you're feeling like, there is, and I am here to tell you, as you know, from being a surgeon and from being a resident, for God knows, there is such a thing as anti-fun. you're regarding, you got to create anti-fun in the precise ratio that the universe creates additional fun. Because I've had anti-fun created for me, particularly in grand rounds. And anti-fun is deeply experienced. So you have the exact correspondence. The additional fun you get is the exact mathematical universe ratio of the anti-fun you've done for somebody else. You're getting more of your own grand rounds fun. So you have an exact thing going on that's a law of the universe. And they say, is there such a thing as anti-fun with science? Well, I'll tell you what. It's like the old Texas boy is asked if he believes in infant baptism. Anti-fun. He said, believe in it? Believe in it? Do I believe in it? Hell, I've seen it done. And I myself have felt anti-fun, as have we all. So, you know, the search for it continues, but look no further. It's obeying the mathematical laws of the conservation of fun. Now, that's every grand rounds you were ever in. So if you have more, that's somebody else has a lot less. And it, yeah. Yeah. So there's some science working there. Yeah.
That's, Bill, this has been an adventure. It's been, we've been talking for more than an hour here. I'm loving it. I'm going to, hour and 6 minutes. I'm going to put a link down below
for all our podcast listeners.
Please definitely check out the Dr. Bond Report. It's a YouTube channel. Again, links down below. I promise you're going to love it. And feel free to contact Dr. Bond and give him your suggestions for a future topic.
Well, Nude, thank you. This has been a big break for me, and you're a hell of a guy. Thank you. I appreciate
you're welcome.
It.
Remind your listeners and viewers, remember, we've got a new Cataract Coach podcast every Sunday on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google, anywhere you find a podcast, you find the Cataract Coach podcast. Plus, of course, we have a new Cataract Coach video every single day, 2,800 something days in a row, and never missed a day. So until next time, I'll catch you later.